Welcome to Inova Radio, your place to gather insight and wisdom for creating healthy organizations. Discover how to uncover defects in your organization and find ways to be a powerful force of change for your organization. Here's your host, David Phillips.
Hey, welcome to the first episode of 2017 for Inova Radio. I'm your host, David Phillips, and it's good to be back with you. We took a short hiatus in end of 2016 for a couple of months. Had some things going on, specifically the adoption of our foster son, and that happened the 1st of November, and we're pretty excited about that. And so we just took some time to, just to make some things happen with him, some special things happen with him. Did a cruise right before Christmas and celebrated an anniversary and my wife graduating from grad school and Christmas, and the week after Christmas was crazy because the week after Christmas is always crazy. And so just took a short hiatus, and we enter 2017 with some good things on the way, personally for me, and hopefully for the podcast as well. A couple of things that just an update. First of all, the last podcast that I did back at the end of October, I talked about Quicken Loans and some of the things that Quicken Loans were doing and how I thought that was great customer service. Let me just take a minute and talk about how you really ought to be. To take the time to, when you have good customer service, when things or companies do something well or do something good for you, to take some time and share that, express that verbally, not only to your peers, but also on social media. You never know what just might happen. And that's kind of the case with me. I did the podcast and talked about Quicken Loans there for a podcast. And a couple of days later, that went out on a Monday. A couple of days later, I got an email from Quicken Loans with my loan number, actually, in the subject header, thanking me for the nice things that I said and for being a great customer. And then I was sitting in my wife's office on Friday. We were eating lunch together, and I got a phone call, and I looked at the number, and I said to my wife, "That's that looks like a Quicken Loans number." And so I answered it, said hello. A nice lady on the other end of the line introduced herself as being from Quicken Loans and wanted to just say how appreciative that they were for my wife and I being a great customer. And they wanted to give me two tickets to the Alabama-Auburn football game at the end of November. I'm a big Alabama fan. And so that was pretty crazy. It was crazy on a couple of levels, because not only did they have to listen to the podcast to figure out what I had talked about, but they also had to do research on me to figure out that I was an Alabama fan. And so they were going to send me tickets, and so they had all my information. They confirmed all of that, and the week before the game, the week of the game, in fact, it was Thanksgiving week. The game was the Saturday after Thanksgiving, but on Wednesday, my tickets arrived overnight. I checked out the tickets, and they were on the 50-yard line, about 50 rows up from the stadium, from the field, and they were great seats. And so let me just give a shout out to Quicken Loans, first of all, for being great, providing an additional great customer service. But also let me just talk a minute about how we need to applaud great customer service from the companies that we do business with. I'm a firm believer that if you have a difficult situation with a company, that you ought to not only share that with them and share that with people above them that you've talked to, but also share the positive experiences that you have. And there have been times when I have called and gotten great customer service, and I have immediately asked the person that I was talking to, who is your superior, somebody that I can talk to and tell them how great customer service, how great service I have been given, and people are very appreciative of that. And so take some time. Next time someone does something good for you, next time a company does something good for you, and applaud them for it, to your colleagues, to your friends, to your family, but also let the world know that customer service and companies are still trying to do good things for their customers. And that if customers want your business, that they will be proactive in doing good things for you, and to share share good things with you. And so just take that to heart. So one of the themes from 2017 for me is the idea of transformation. What does transformation look like for me personally? What does it look like for my family? And what does it look like? And ultimately, what does it look like with the people I influence and the people I can make an investment in? And so as I was doing some thinking and some research on the idea of transformation, both personal and corporate, I ran across this idea that I had seen before in other just running across some things, but it kind of caught my attention. One particular article caught my attention, and I want to talk to you about it. It's called nudge theory, and it is found in it was really defined and designed by a couple of academics named Thaler and Cass Sunstein, and it is used in trying to help change social behavior. It's a theory about how to change social behavior. And so the way they define it is any aspect of the choice architecture that alters people's behavior in a predictable way without forbidding any options or significantly changing their economic incentives. And this was defined in 2008. And it's part of a branch of behavioral economics that applies psychology to economic decision making. Behavioral economics was kind of pioneered by Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky, and it attempts to help deal with what seems like irrational forms of behavior, and how to help or how to understand how people make decisions from an economic standpoint. So the article that I found came from Harvard Business Review, and it was on public policy. And so the article opens up with this paragraph. For anyone interested in human behavior and decision making, September 15th will likely be a day to remember. On that day, President Obama ordered government agencies to use behavioral science insights to, quote, better serve the American people, end quote. In his executive order, Obama instructed federal agencies to identify policies and operations where applying findings from behavioral science could improve, quote, public welfare, program outcomes, and program cost effectiveness. Design strategies for using behavioral science insights and recruit behavioral experts whenever considered necessary or helpful. And one of the things that they're looking at is how to put together policies and put together marketing strategies to help create social behavior transformation. And so one of the things that an example of this kind of work is actually found in England. So over the last decade or so, they've used behavioral science insights, and a group in England has used behavioral science insights to and apply them to public policy to affect change in areas such as tax payments, medical decisions, consumer health, and climate change. The team is called the Behavioral Insights Team, or BIT, and it's an organization set up in the UK to apply nudges to improve policy and services. And so one example of that is in one study, BIT partnered with the UK Driver and Vehicle Licensing Agency to change the wording that they sent out in a letter to people who were delinquent in paying their vehicle taxes. And so they took out all of the complex legal language and basically said that you either have to pay your taxes or lose your car. And to make that demand more personal, some of the letters also included a photo of the car. So people were out watching and trying to find, take pictures of the cars in question. And so the impact of that was that the rewritten letter increased the number of people paying the tax. But the rewrite with the photo had a much larger impact. Another example that used by an energy company in California, they sent letters to people who had high energy usage in California, trying to influence them to consume less energy. And so the letter told them how their consumption compared with the consumption of their neighbors. And so through that nudge, it triggered strong negative emotions and led to a 10% reduction in energy consumption. So they guilted people into reducing energy consumption. And so the question becomes, how not only are they effective, but is there a moral or ethical issue in trying to, for organizations and particularly governments to try to influence and change social behavior this way? I mean, there are ways in which that is done now. There's one group is called nudging, the fifth mode of government. Of governance, the other being hierarchy, markets, networks, and persuasion. So the question becomes: is it ethical? Is it viable? Is it something that organizations and particularly governments need to be involved in? Now, the cornerstone of nudging is an understanding of humans as efficient information processors. this term was developed in the 80s, a term called cognitive misers, or that term was developed in the 80s by Fisk and Taylor. So the understanding of humans is inefficient information processors that, in their desire or their quest to save mental resources or to not use their brain or to not think, they just make errors whenever they make a decision. And it's developed this belief that policymakers and organizations can, and not only can, but they're entitled to work with these issues, work with this inefficiency to achieve outcomes. And this is done by changing the choices that people have in a way to herd them or move them toward optimal outcomes, instead of having those people or having people reflect systematically or thoughtfully on what's the best choice. So you basically limit their options and force them into a direction in which you want them to go. They have their effect. These nudges, they have their effect because people are tend to be sensitive to social norms and become, because we all are somewhat attracted to a herd mentality. And so behavior is assumed to result from people's tendency to just adopt the behaviors of others as the appropriate guide. So, you do what the other person is doing because that's what is deemed appropriate. They're saying we don't even think about what is appropriate behavior. We just do what other people do. And so nudging basically relies on the idea that humans are error-prone in their decision-making, and instead of trying to help boost decision-making and decision-making skills and how to process information, the decision is made to just move them in the direction that the organization or the policy or the government wants them to go, and really just not give them a choice, just herd them that way, so that they do what ultimately you want them to do. It's a passive aggressive form of coercion, and they take human failings as a starting point. So they just assume that people will choose options that will demand the least effort. So they won't even think really about what to do. It's either pay up or lose your car, for instance. Well, there may be other options, but that means I have to do some research and do some thinking and try to, call someone and get some advice. And in doing so, I actually have to use my brain and take up some time and energy and maybe a couple of dollars to figure out what is the best thing that I can do. Institutions that use nudging are trying to get, are just trying to rely on the fact that people aren't going to make that time investment. They're not going to think about what they're doing. They're just going to take the least objectionable, least difficult journey or the road, or make the least difficult position or decision. But the problem is that, unlike persuasion that involves appeals to an individual's ability to reason and think, and to digest new information and engage in processing things, and to and using all of that to embrace different beliefs and preferences, nudging attempts to influence behavior in a way that it people don't even reflect about the course of action that they're about to take. There's no reflection. It's guilt. It's social pressure. And so it just winds up that the organization or the government or whoever is trying to nudge people along, they are actually making the decision for the decision maker. I mean, we see that in Obamacare, the new healthcare law, where it's get insurance or you're gonna get your pay tax for it. And so that's an instance. It's coerced in this sense, but it makes it easy. Well, I'll get the insurance. But then the question becomes, do I get the insurance or do I pay the fine, and which is cheaper and which is more cost effective? People don't look at making those decisions. It's just, pay the fine or get the insurance. And so that's an aspect of nudging, in my mind. The real issue here is who becomes, whose view of what is the best outcome is right. If you're a Democrat, then you might say that the Democratic government, a Democratic-oriented government and a Democratic president, their view is right. And so when they nudge people to a certain direction, that, that's going to be the right thing to do. If you're a Republican, then you would say it's the Republican government and the Republican president who are going to issue. I mean, those are going to be good nudges, that people ought to do that. But what if you're not a Republican and a Democratic is a president, and you are being forced to do something that you don't necessarily agree with or think is right, and you are being forced, coerced, told to, you've got two choices: you can do this, or you can go to jail, or you can do this, or pay a fine, you can do this, or not get this service, or you can do one thing or not do another, or do another thing, and you're only given two choices in some cases. And so the question becomes, do we ethically want our governments, and do we ethically want our, from an ethical standpoint, do we want organizations nudging us to in the way that they want us to go? I mean, you can think back to 1984, the book 1984. You can think to other instances where we see an overreaching of government in making decisions. It almost borders on some of the isms that we know from government: fascism, socialism, communism, those kinds of things. Because for instance, in communist regimes, they were democratic in nature. In other words, people went out to vote, but they only had one choice to vote for. The same can be said with organizations. Do we want them to nudge us into behavior or decisions that produce outcomes that may go against our morals and our ethics? Do we want to have that option? Do we want that to be prevalent in our organization? For some critics, nudging is ethically problematic, and it causes me concern. I haven't thought through it fully, but there are some problems, specifically ethically, with the concept of nudging. So here's just I'll name a couple that I found in an article it's a journal article from a group in Australia. So here's some. Nudging is ethically problematic because, number one, it precludes debate about what constitutes the good life, and it allows the nudgers' conceptions of well-being to override those of the nudgees. That's a direct quote from the paper. I didn't make those words up. But in other words, there is no debate about what is good, what is a healthy outcome, what is the best outcome, and it allows those who want to nudge, allows their conceptions to override the understanding, the conceptions, the ethics, the morals of those who they are trying to nudge. Number two, others dismiss nudging as essentially a conservative approach that extends the longevity of status quo reinforcing norms, arguing that nudging to secure neoliberal goals raises fundamental issues about our concept of free will. So in other words, do we really have a choice in most matters of life? And that is a big question. Do we have free will? Do we have the ability to make a choice about where we would go, about what we would study, about what we would, how we would, what kind of vocation we would have, or are we being pushed in a passive aggressive way, or attempted to be passively moved toward a specific outcome based on our social class, or in or our intellect, or where we live, or some other criteria. The third is that others accept that governments may at times want to resort to nudges, but argue that it's important to retain necessary space for deliberation about issues of public concern. In other words, we really do need to have discussions about what is the outcome that we're looking for, the outcome that we want, and it needs to be a public debate, not a private debate behind closed doors, or a private debate where there really is no input, or a private public debate that where suggestions are basically ignored. We need, specifically in a policy level, we need the ability to have that free space where the debate can happen. It can happen in a healthy way, and that all sides will be heard, and that all things can be considered in coming up with a policy or outcomes. And that's important, specifically from a public policy standpoint, because the government has the power to coerce that the private sector may or may not have. And so all of this nudging is specifically an issue for me from a public policy standpoint, but also from a corporate standpoint, because there are some wackos on both sides, conservative and liberal, that I do not want making decisions for me about what is the good life for me. Does that make sense? Now, here's what I will say about humans and their ability to make decisions. This is a lot of what I looked at in my doctoral dissertation. People are not rational people. We like to think that people are rational people. We like to think that our leaders are rational leaders, but leaders are not necessarily rational. In other words, and specifically, our attempt to be rational or logical is really our brain's attempt to rationalize what we are feeling. We are not rational or logical beings. We are emotional people who try to rationalize how we feel. And as much as we like to depend on research, and as much as we like to depend on academics, and as much as we like to think that we are making something, a decision that is logical and is meaningful and is has looked at all sides, really, at our core, we are people, we are emotional people whose attempts at being rational is just our brains, our brain trying to rationalize how we feel. So our decisions are emotional. They're more primarily emotional decision makers. And so we have to keep that in mind. If you want a good example of that, watch an episode of Hoarders on TLC. I was watching, scanning the TV recently, and ran across that show again, and noticed the number, the amount of stuff in this one person's house. And they knew, I mean, there were roaches all around, and there was feces on the floor, and there was rats all over the place, and walls were caving in, and mold was all over the place. And a rational person could not make the decision to continue to live in this manner. But, and you can say that these folks have a disease, they're ill, they're sick, there's something wrong with them. And yes, that there is something at their core that's creating this situation where they feel this need to hoard. But we're all that way. We may not hoard. We have other aspects of our life for which our decision making is not rational. And it is that way on so much of everything that we decide and the decisions we make. And so I get the need to try to design and define outcomes for an individual, because they may not be in their right mind. They may have some specific issue, and we might need to design some things for them to help them overcome that issue, some cognitive behavior therapy, that's all for mental health professionals, really. But for public policy decisions to be made that will transform social institutions and social groups toward one direction or another, basically denying self-will and deny a free will and denying the ability to think and process and come to an understanding of decisions that need to be made and outcomes that need to be made on our own, there's a grave ethical issue there, and we need to be aware of it. Nudges are an issue. They are a way in which society is transformed and people's behaviors are modified, but they are not ethical in nature. And we need to be wary of that. So as you look at things, letters you're getting from companies and letters you're getting from and phone calls and policies that are coming down from local, state, and federal governments, try to use your own brain to think through what are they trying to get me to do? What is the eventual outcome that they are trying to get me to agree to, whether passively or actively? What are they trying to get me to do? And then think back through that and think about, is this right or not? Is this the outcome that I want? Is this the outcome that that our city needs? Is it the outcome that our state needs or our government? And speak up and make decisions and speak up and say something about it in a healthy, effective way. Let your voice be heard. But don't just assume that because it's coming from a government or because it's coming from an institution that you have no choice in what can be done. Explore your options and explore your choices so that you can make the best decision for you and your family. And ultimately, it may prove to be the best decision for your city or your social group or whatever organization or social organization you are involved in. Now, you may want to try to have others give others permission to nudge you, to design some outcomes for you and to give you choices. And maybe you want to mentally put together nudges in your own mind. Like it's either don't eat or eat a salad if you're trying to lose weight. It's either exercise or either go to the gym or take a 20-minute walk. You might choose to do that internally with your own decision making, but when it gets to a point where public policy is designed this way, where people are passively coerced to move to a specific outcome, there are some real dangers there, because whose ethics, whose outcomes, who determines what's right, who determines what's good? What do you think about nudges? Have you ever thought about that? Maybe you want to do some more research on that, to think about how it can be applied personally, or even how it is being applied corporately, socially, or through public policy. Let me know through comments or Facebook post or blog post, whichever way is easier for you. So thanks for joining me today on and listening up. I hope this was informative to you, and I hope you got a kick out of specifically the Quicken update. I look forward to coming at you again next month. We're going to do this once a month, but I look forward to sharing with you next month, and hope you have a great rest of the month. Take care.
Thanks for listening in today, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode of Powerful Insight. For more up-to-date information and tips to help you on your quest for change, head over to the website at www.wdavidphillips.com and sign up for our newsletter.